Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Today, on a very special episode of The Charlie Kirk Show, we bring you an exclusive interview with the one and the only Ambassador Nikki Haley, live from Turning Point USA's Young Women's Leadership Summit in Dallas, Texas. In this wide-ranging discussion, we explore her humble beginnings as the daughter of Indian immigrants, her improbable and meteoric rise to becoming the first female governor of South Carolina, and then, of course, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. We also talk about what she plans on doing next. You're not going to miss a moment of my exclusive sit-down of this great American leader and patriot, truly one of the most influential political leaders in the entire world. This is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Is your dad a Trump supporter? It's Father's Day, and whether you love him or you hate him, Donald Trump is our 45th president and is making history in our lifetime. Noble Gold has the perfect gift for you and your dad. This is pretty amazing. Get this. A minted exclusive collector's piece, the Trump Freedom Coin. One side depicts an image of Donald J. Trump, while the other side lists all of his major achievements. I actually think this is a better gift if your father doesn't love Donald Trump. At less than $40 for each silver coin, this makes the perfect gifts for dads and grads. This commemorative limited edition 1 ounce silver coin is the only presidential Trump coin made up of 99.9% silver, not silver plating, and IRA approved. As the price of silver rises, so will the value of these coins. So it's a great investment too. These silver coins priced at less than $40 are a perfect gift for anyone. Act now. Go to TrumpCoin2020.com. Use code Kirk. Do it right now to get $5 off now. That's TrumpCoin2020.com. It's a perfect gift for your dad, the presidential Trump coin. Go to TrumpCoin2020.com and use promo code Kirk. Get $5 off. That's TrumpCoin2020.com. And use the code Kirk now. You won't regret it. This stuff, they're really, really cool. They're really fun. I got a couple myself, Noble Gold. But go to TrumpCoin2020.com and use the code Kirk now. Ambassador.
I have to tell you, there is nothing I love more than to be in a room of girlfriends. And now that I get to be in a room with girlfriends and Charlie, it's even better, right?
Well, thank you. And I have to just say, you know, I mean it when I say, the passion that you brought to the UN, the results that you delivered, the success that you showed as governor of South Carolina, I wish every Republican was as tough as you were all the way up and down and also carried themselves with that kind of grace and that kind of clarity of thought. And just what a role model you are for all people, but young women in particular. So thank you for taking the time to address this historic audience, truly.
Thank you. And a reminder to everyone, America is always worth fighting for. Always.
So tell us, let's start at the beginning. Yes. Tell us about your background, where you came from, and walk everyone through your amazing, incredible story.
I was born in a small rural town in South Carolina. We were I got a South Carolina girl out there. I love that. We were the only Indian family. We weren't white enough to be white. We weren't black enough to be black. As you saw, my dad wears a turban. My mom at the time wore a sari. They didn't know who we were, what we were, or why we were there. And I remember when we would come home after being teased on the playground, my mom would always say, your job is not to show people how you're different. Your job is to show them how you're similar. And the other thing that my parents would always remind us, my brothers, my sister, and me, every day is how blessed we were to live in this country. And so, you know, I learned that same lesson I learned in the playground. I used in corporate world, I used as governor, I used as UN ambassador, because if you have a challenge in front of you, if you first address the things that you all agree on first, they let their body armor down. And then you can get to the more challenging things to get to a solution. And so it was a great lesson on that playground that has played out for the rest of my life. So.
So for all the college students out there, what was your first job out of college and how did you get it?
So my first job in college, I was a chiropractic assistant and a waitress. My first job out of college, I graduated from Clemson, go Tigers, with a degree in accounting, and I went and became an accounting supervisor for a company and six of its subsidiaries.
And so what advice would you have for young women trying to choose what studies to go into and kind of making these very important career choices at this moment in their life?
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, find something you love, something that you can really throw your passion into. And my mom would always say, whatever you do, be great at it and make sure people remember you for it. And I think that's really important. But going into my first job, I was the only female executive of the company. And I want to tell you a story because this will let you know how learning doesn't stop in school. We had a meeting, and one day the CEO was running late. And so we were all sitting around, and he comes running in, and at that point the CFO turned to me real quick and said, Nikki, will you get Paul a cup of coffee? And I remember, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew how I handled that moment would matter on how they treated me going forward. I said, absolutely. And I leaned over to the phone in the middle of the table, and I called my executive assistant. And I said, Pam, will you please bring Paul a cup of coffee? They never asked me to get coffee again. But the point of that is, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. You don't always have to kick and scream. You don't have to make a scene. You don't have to embarrass people. But you do have to stand your ground. And you always have to protect your integrity.
And so, early in your career, what were some specific things you did that really paid off long term? That you can look back and say, that's one thing that really paid dividends decades later.
I look at it really when I got tired of working for the people down the hall. And so I left corporate America and came back to our family business. And I would always complain about how hard it was to make a dollar and how easy it was for government to take it. And my mom said, quit complaining about it, do something about it. I didn't know you weren't supposed to run against a 30-year incumbent in a primary. I really didn't. Ignorance is bliss. But once I got in, the only option was to win. So my husband drove, I sat in the front seat, my two little ones were in the back seat, and we started knocking on doors. I say that because going through that process was not easy, wasn't always fun, and it was scary. But the lessons I've learned throughout time is push through the fear. Because that feeling when you're presented with a situation, that feeling that always kind of makes you want to step back, push through that fear. Because when you do, you will find out you're so much stronger on the other side. So I pushed through the fear in being the only female executive. I pushed through the fear of running for office. I pushed through the fear of running for governor. I pushed through the fear of taking on an ambassador role. But what if I wouldn't have? What if I would have taken that step back? I would never have been able to move the ball the way I've been able to move the ball. So the number one thing, if you take anything from me, push through the fear, and whatever you do, be great at it and make sure people remember you for it.
You have the proud distinction to be the first female governor from the great state of South Carolina, one of my favorite states, and I think at the time, the youngest governor, and one of the youngest governors, I'm betting, in U.S. history. Did being a woman impact your job or your being in that position at all in the good old boys network of Southern Republican politics?
Well, there were no lines to the women's bathroom, I will tell you. There were a lot of men. When I became governor, the average age of those in the legislature, I was born when, I'm trying to get this right because it was so amazing, the average age of most of those guys was like 55. So when I came in, they were like, oh my God, it's a girl, you know, and it was really awkward for them because South Carolina's built in tradition, it's built in heritage, and the fact that South Carolina just elected a female was a little bit difficult. But my goal, again, was not to show them how I was different. My job was to show them how I was similar and to get them to get the job done that we needed to do for the people of South Carolina. So once again, was it easy? No. But once they saw how I worked, they trusted me. There was some accountability to it. They knew that I'd call them out if they didn't do the right thing.
Sure.
And we were able to get things done from there.
So for other women in the audience breaking barriers right now in their what might be in their university, what did you learn being a barrier breaker that they could also take some advice from?
Don't expect to be perfect. You know, I think the main thing is, I have always said, do the best you can. The way I lived all through all of these jobs was I would do the best I could every day and wake up the next morning and say, let's try this again. And the goal is to make today better than yesterday. And that's all you have to do. You're gonna fall. You're gonna mess up. But that's not what defines you. It's how you get up and how you move forward. If we don't fall, we don't learn lessons. And so I think what's most important is be strong, move forward, and make sure people feel you're being in the room. If you're in the room and no one knows you're there and they don't know the power of your voice, they're missing out. And you have to get that out there so that they can know more about you.
So people admire you for being a strong leader in politics, but it's important to note you're also a mother, you're also a military wife, and a friend to so many. How do you balance it all? I mean, people say, you know, oh, this person's busy. I mean, how do you balance it all?
So it depends on the day. I'll tell you a story. When Michael was deployed to Afghanistan, I was governor and then, of course, single mom at the time of two little ones. And I had to get the kids to school. And so I was rushing to get the kids to school. And Nalen, my son, he had to wear a tie that day. And I couldn't figure out how to get it on, because Michael always did that. And the worst part, it was a clip-on tie, so it shouldn't have even been that hard. And so I couldn't get it on right, and so I went outside, and I signaled to one of our security guys. I said, Sydney, can you come help me get this tie on Nalen? So we're standing outside, we're getting it on, I kiss his cheeks, we send him on his way, and then I go back, and I go to open the door, and it's locked. So here I am in my robe, sitting outside the governor's residence, where I just am like, oh my God, a TV truck is going to ride by at any given time. I'm looking at the security cameras like, guys, come on. And then all of a sudden, my daughter opens the door and she goes, Mom, what are you doing outside in your robe? I think she thought I had lost it. And she said, I don't know what to wear. So I helped her get ready. And I do my own social media. I always have. And when I got her out the door, I just said what not to do, get locked out of the house with your robe on. Didn't think anything else of it. Get ready, go to get in the car. Driver says, ma'am, I'm sorry you've had a tough morning. And I said, oh, did you see my social media post? He goes, no, I heard about it on the radio. And I said, the radio? And I look at my phone and my phone is blowing up and my press team said, did you really get locked out of the house in your robe? And I'm like, yes, why? And they said, because the TV stations want the security video. And I'm like, no. And so the next thing I know, the Today Show, Good Morning America, every night show, they're all talking about me getting locked out in my robe. And I just get an email from Michael with one sentence that says, really, Nikki? But the point is, balancing is a day-by-day thing. I will tell you the number one rule of thumb is if you take care of your family first, everything else will fall into place. I always said if I'm a good wife and a good mother, I'll be a great governor. And I said the same thing as ambassador. If I'm a good wife and a good mother, I'll be a great ambassador. Because your family is what keeps you humble, honest, and they're the only ones that will have your back. And if anything's off with your family, it distracts you all day. So keep your family strong. Make sure you've got the support you need from your family, and there's nothing that you can't do.
So being a young conservative on campus can be very difficult. Being a young conservative woman on campus is especially difficult, not only on college campuses, but also in social media and many otherwise. What advice do you have in this new generation, this new era of politics, especially since you do your own social media? What advice do you have for the young women here, both on the activism they do on college campuses and also in social media?
So first, know that we need you. We need you to use the power of your voice. And especially on college campuses, it can be really hard because there are not a lot of voices like you, so you think. But if you use the power of your voice, and if you stand up, you're actually representing a lot of other people who were too scared to say something. And when you do it first, people are going to start coming to you because they agree with you. And then more will do it. You know, at the UN or even as governor, there were a lot of times I had to stand alone. But there's nothing wrong with standing alone if you believe you're fighting for what is right. So know that the best place to learn about how to use the power of your voice is in high school. It's in college, because that's where you're going to meet all kinds of people from all different walks of life. And it's not about them thinking like you or you thinking like them. It's about you and what is in your core and living and being that way. And it doesn't matter if no one else is with you. It's right if it's right for you. And when it comes to social media, the one thing I'll tell you is just be careful. Be responsible in the way that if you put something out there, it's there forever. I didn't hire a single person in the governor's office or in the ambassador's office where we didn't check their social media. No one. Because if you are careless with your thoughts, if you're rude in a way that, you know, you don't know how to talk to people, we would be concerned. There were times where I hired Democrats. There were times where I hired liberals. That's not it. I didn't look at it for partisan side. I looked at it for respect. I looked at it for leadership. And I looked at it for someone who was responsible enough with their social media. Be passionate. Say what you think, but say it responsibly, because others are watching and it's never deleted. It never goes away. And just be conscious of that.
And so I get the question a lot from all young activists: how do I get involved in politics? Like, where do I start? So what advice do you have, obviously, starting on the grassroots level? I just want to reinforce something that the ambassador said earlier. What she did to challenge the Good Old Boys Network through the primary in South Carolina was such an improbable run. And I don't think the ambassador gets credit for not only winning that surprise election race, but being an amazingly effective governor in a very difficult state to govern that's essentially under one-party rule. And for those of you in Texas and other states, it can be harder to govern under one party than under two parties, because holding your own accountable can be very, very difficult.
Yes, it's very
and it's almost harder that way, because you got to give tough love a lot of the time. And so what advice do you have for all young people that you say, I want to get started, but where do I start?
So first, know there's no prerequisite to get involved in politics. When I decided to run for the legislature, everyone would say, your children are too small, you can't do it. You're too young, why don't you start with school board? Or, you know, I think you just need to take this slower, join the Republican Club first. The reason I ran for office was just to defy everything that they were saying. I mean, outside of the fact that there were a lot of lawyers at the State House and I thought they needed one really good accountant. But I think that the idea is, wherever you are in life right now, if you want to get involved in politics, do it. If that means working with a program like Turning Point, do it. If that means running for office, don't think you have to start in a low spot. Go wherever you want. If you like state issues, go for a state position. If you like school issues, go for a school position. But go, and don't wait for someone else to say, yes, you should.
That is such important advice. I get it all the time, and they say, well, where do I start? I said, the answer's in the question. Start. Begin something. You can go to a phone banking. You can start knocking on doors. If you put good energy out and you want to be in politics, there will be opportunities that open up. And so I have to say, it's amazing. And just to give more context for everyone, the position at the United Nations typically under especially the former president was just like a country club position. They would go and rubber stamp everything and basically give agreement to other countries to continue to do bad things to our country. In our own country, mind you, in New York. And what a change of pace it was to have a leader like you there that was being outvoted almost every time, that had to hear horrible things said about our country and also about Israel, our greatest ally in the Middle East. And it's important to realize it wasn't just the embassy move, but it was also TPP. It was also getting out of the Paris Climate Accord. And you stood with such grace and conviction against countries that really don't have nice things to say about us. How did you do that? Give us some insight into that.
I mean, I was blessed to serve the country I love so much. And I have always said I wear heels. It's not a fashion statement. It's for ammunition. And so I never went into a situation feeling like I was the only girl or I was the minority or anything like that. I had a job to do. And I would kick whoever got in the way of doing that job. And when they would talk about America, I got my back up and I wasn't going to let anyone disparage the United States of America. Because as much as they resented us, and as much as other countries would badmouth us, they all wanted to be us. And they all wanted us to lead. You know, one of the most important things is when the president made the decision to go and attack Assad after he used chemical weapons on all of those people and those children. Once he did that strike and he held the red line, the number of ambassadors that came to me and said, and texted and called, said, it's so good to see the U.S. lead again. They want us to lead. They need us to lead.
And in previous administrations, that red line was crossed, and there was no action.
And I felt like my job was very much for everyone to know what the United States was for and what the United States was against. You didn't have to like it. But I made sure there was no gray, and we defended where we were, and we fought for it. And I think that there were things like, you know, the Paris Climate Agreement. Everybody thinks that just because we got out of it, that we don't care about the environment. That's not true. We very much care about the environment. And the United States proves it every day with all of our companies that do good things and build green buildings, and we're constantly doing all of those things. But this Paris Agreement was so flawed that here we had major regulations that were pushing on our businesses in a way that we couldn't ever hit that point. And you had China, who barely had to do anything, who last year had more carbon emissions than they'd had in the 7 years before. They weren't following it, so it was a farce. And all we did was call it out for the truth that it was, that we are going to always be conscious of the environment. We're always going to do our part when it comes to the climate change. But we're not going to have other countries tell us how to do it.
And especially not have us have to pay for it and have to really sacrifice our own sovereignty there. And so, you know, being in the UN with that valuable foreign policy experience and all these difficult decisions that you made, it's still, when I had the opportunity to visit the UN about 8 or 9 months ago with the Israeli ambassador to the UN, and I said, you know, how are things? He said, well, it's kind of one of the toughest jobs to be the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations because everyone always votes against you, no matter who you are. And I said, well, what about Ambassador Haley? And his eyes lit up, and he said, she's amazing. She's the first person to actually have our back in this building since I've been here and the first place to actually stand for what is correct. I said, well, and you should applaud it. It's incredible.
Thank you.
And And I went and I met a couple other ambassadors from even some of the European countries who are finally being called into account for doing some not some great things all the time, like voting against the embassy move. And I said, well, what do you guys think of Ambassador Haley? And they said, well, we don't necessarily agree with her, but she has such a great way about her. It's all positive. Yeah. And so only you could have people say nice things about you while also making them demand to pay up for the first time in a very long time. How on earth is that possible? Tell us how you achieve that, where you have people that should hate you, but they actually end up loving you.
You know, it was an example of right when I was leaving, the Russian ambassador was talking to one of my deputies, and he just said, you know, I don't know how she does it. And she said, you know what? And he said, she says exactly what she wants to say. She does it in a way that we think she's being nice. He goes, but today she just called us a bunch of losers. And the truth is, again, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. You don't have to say a lot. But when you say it, it needs to sting a little bit if that's what you're trying to do. But you also have to be respectful. They all had a job to do. They were doing the same thing I was trying to do for my country. But I didn't back down. I didn't need to make friends with them, but I needed to have a good communication with them to make sure that we could get some things done. And I think that they weren't used to my straight talk and me being blunt, but they also appreciated that I said it in a way that was kind.
Well, I think that's such an instructive lesson, because think about it. With you raising your hand 14-1, it reminds me of a young conservative woman who might be in a lecture hall when a professor says, who here supports President Trump? And, you know, it's the only person that raises their hand. And you can get people, you can win over other people despite the differences you might have.
They will respect you for standing for what you believe in, always. And so it's worth, you know, and I've said many times at the UN, I may have been standing alone, but I was proud to stand alone if I was fighting for the right thing. And I think that that's where you learn courage. That's where you learn strength, and have fun with it. Don't take it so seriously. Don't let it be heavy. When you stand up for something you believe in, know that you're learning how to be comfortable in your skin. And that's so important when you're out there kind of using the power of your voice, is experiment with it. It's not like you just have to get it right the first time. I learned lots of lessons along the way. But what I know more than anything is life is easier when you tell the truth. And if you live your life telling the truth and being true to yourself, there's nothing you can do, can't do.
So one of the biggest issues in our country right now that I just think gets intentionally demagogued by the media, and we talked a little bit about this backstage, is the immigration debate. And I feel that we as a country actually have more in common about this debate than we ever give ourselves credit for. But I feel as if it gets widely misrepresented. And so you actually have a unique perspective on this, being a daughter of legal immigrants to this country and business-owning immigrants that were enterprising. And so what's your perspective on the issue? What's the solution? Is it merit-based immigration? How do we fix the asylum laws? Would love to get your perspective on that.
So, you know, I said I was born the daughter of legal immigrants. They came here, they put in the time, they paid the price, and they came here the right way. They are offended by those that... My parents are offended by those that don't come here legally. And they've always said, if you don't follow the laws to get into this country, you won't follow the laws when you live in this country. So this doesn't mean that we don't want immigrants in our country. We do. The fabric of America is legal immigration. But we are a country of laws. The second you give up being a country of laws, you lose everything this country was founded on. So the frustration right now is Congress needs to be in there debating immigration, and they're not. They're doing a lot of talking about it, not a lot of action when it comes to it. The second, and know that it's not rocket science. We had last month 142,000 people come on our border. When the president started, it was less than 20,000, and we thought that was a lot. This is a crisis situation. What we need to do is come up with the processes. We need more judges so that we aren't just letting people go free. We need processes in place at the border. And more importantly, we need to be talking to the leaders in Guatemala and Honduras. I've been to both of those and talked to them. We need to be talking to them, asking them, why are these caravans coming, and what are you going to do to stop them? And hold the line at the countries where they're coming from. We don't need to wait until they get to the border.
And just in the last hour, I'm not sure if you saw the news, the president tweeted that actually a deal with Mexico has been reached, and which is great. Like to comment on that?
You know, I think that what is important is the president has pushed these countries to a place that's uncomfortable. But it was time. We needed to do this because it was time to let them know that we weren't going to sit back anymore. We weren't going to let them have their way anymore. I think, you know, every president gets to decide how they want their foreign policy to be. President Obama chose the idea that he just didn't want to rock the boat. He wanted all countries to like us. And we got into a situation that because of that, we had to deal with a lot of issues that had not been dealt with. And so all of a sudden, when we get out of the Paris Climate Agreement, the Europeans are mad. Well, we didn't speak up when we should have spoken up when they were signing a bad deal to start with. So we had to fix that. The Iran deal. When you go and you have Iran and they're supporting terrorism, and not just in their area, but after we've given a plane full of money to them, now they're supporting terrorism in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen. And so pulling that money back was acknowledging a truth, that we had just paid them to support terrorism. We didn't stop them from doing nuclear development. And so I think that when you live in facts, which is what the president has tried to do, and you don't say, oh, it can't be done, then things do happen. And the idea that he said, if you don't go and fix this problem, and if you don't start working with us, we're going to put tariffs on you, and they came around that quick, it is such a sign that so many other things can be fixed too. They cry wolf, but at the end of the day, they can get it done.
I love it. And if we take a moment to actually appreciate what you and your team and the president was able to accomplish abroad, it's really extraordinary. When the president and you came into office, you came into your position, and the president came into office, there was chatter about horrific relations in North Korea. There, ISIS was on the march. Russia was going unobstructed in Ukraine. And despite the media narrative, this president and his administration has been tougher on Russia than any other president in recent memory, whether it be arming the Ukrainians, whether it be dispelling Russian dissidents in this country, whether it be two volleys of Tomahawk missiles a year apart that Putin objected to in Syria to his best friend Bashar al-Assad. And so you look at the amazing accomplishments, I boil it down to something that you embody so well, and so does the president, which is, in order for America to be peaceful and the world to be peaceful, America has to be tough. And when America is tough, the world is a safer place.
And I agree with that. And I think America has to act when we need to. You know, it's not about what you say, it's about what you do. And I think so much of what the president has done is, he's not talking a lot about it. He's literally getting it done. When we got out of the Iran deal, it changed the entire dynamic of how we were dealing with terrorism. When we got out of the Paris Climate Agreement, it changed the fact that sovereignty matters. When we moved the embassy to Jerusalem, it acknowledged a fact that they were thinking that the Palestinians were still going to get Jerusalem. It acknowledged the truth that that is the capital of Israel, and we put our embassy in every capital, in every country. So many of these things were acknowledging truths and facts. And while other countries didn't like it, it was a new day. It was a new way of doing business, and our goal was to make sure that they understood that, and they get that now, and I think it's working
for
us.
And look at the success. Tensions in North Korea significantly de-escalated. ISIS, completely and totally destroyed in their capital, has been reclaimed by Western forces.
Yep.
Iran has finally been held accountable for their horrific actions of funding terror all across the globe. Just the difference. Barack Obama sends them, you know, billions in cash, and we send them very tough looks at the UN. Yes. So thank you for that on behalf of all of us freedom fighters.
Yes, of
and
course.
The results speak for themselves.
That's right.
Because when America is weak, we actually get closer to conflict, not further away from it.
That's right. That's right. No, and I think that, you know, they still, so many of the other countries, they look to us to lead because they do still see us as having the moral compass in the world. They do still want to watch what we do because at the end of the day, they need a country to follow. And it's either does U.S. lead or does China lead? They don't want to follow China. They'd much rather follow the United States. So we need to be strong about it.
So we have another election coming up in 2020, and both of us, and I think everyone in this room, supports the president to go hopefully triumphantly win in 2020.
Yes.
But we all, whether the students on campus or those of us in the media, get just thrown with that the president should be impeached and all these horrendous things. How do you handle this? Because all of us the next 18 months are going to be experiencing a lot of that.
Well, one thing you should know about working with the president, just to let you know what it was like to work with him, everybody said, how did you get out of the administration and not have any issues? And it honestly was that I just told the president the truth. If I didn't agree with something he was doing, I would tell him, and he would listen, and he would say, well, and I'd say, well, I don't think we should be doing this. I think we should go in this direction. And his answer was, well, how do you see that playing out? And we would talk through it. And I think what people don't understand is he really does listen.
Yes.
And he was very respectful. And we could talk about things that needed to happen. And so the work that I did at the UN, I was on the phone with him all the time. We were working together all the time. I'd say, I feel like maybe we should go in this direction. He'd say, run with it. He really does allow the people that work for him to do their job and do it well. He expects a lot of them, but he allows that. So I think first, as a person, I can tell you he was always very respectful and always listening. And you should just know that about the president as you go into it, is that I had a very good working relationship with him and found it to be very productive. The second thing is, as every election is, they're all important. But when it comes to the impeachment, we had the Mueller investigation. I said it should play out. They didn't need to take 2.5 years for it to play out. That was ridiculous. And then they come back and they can't even say that there's nothing there. But having said that, when they're talking about impeachment, when others talk about that, talk about the tax cuts. Talk about unemployment. Talk about the stock market being fantastic. Talk about the fact that you can ask anyone and now all their family and friends have jobs and they're doing well and they've got more money in their pockets and our foreign policy is as strong as it's ever been. Talk about the good things because they want you to talk about impeachment. They want you to talk about the Mueller investigation. They want you to talk about all the things that have been disproven and aren't there anymore. So you talk about what's real. The impeachment's not real. Unemployment? Real. I mean, the economy? Real. And everybody feels it. Because at the end of the day, people vote with their quality of life and their wallets. If those things are good, then they want it to stay on the same path. So that would be my advice, is talk about the good things. We don't need to get into the mud with all that other stuff. Let's stay high. Let's talk about the facts. And let's talk about the fact that we are winning. And we're doing really well.
We're not sick of it yet. Here's why I'm a big fan of SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe is ready for anything that gets thrown at it. If a storm takes out your power, SimpliSafe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. Say they destroy your keypad or siren, SimpliSafe will get you the help that you need. Here's what I love about this. Maybe it's overkill. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst case scenario, but SimpliSafe is always ready, just in case. That's what makes it great. Now SimpliSafe could cost an arm and a leg. It should, but it doesn't. And that's why they're good people. And that's why you need SimpliSafe. It's only $14.99 a month. No contracts, no hidden fees. I use it. You have got to use it too. Go to simplysafe.com/Charlie. That's simplysafe.com/Charlie. I caught a clip where Whoopi Goldberg recently weighed in on one of, she actually brought you up in the abortion debate, and I saw that you responded on social media in your typical, just always taking the higher road. But just in general, it seems that American attitudes are changing on abortion for the better, those of us that care about the rights of the unborn and that are pro-life. What's kind of your commentary on that, especially because this being a young women's leadership summit, I guarantee you a lot of our young women activists confront that issue more times than not.
Well, and the speech I gave was at the Susan B. Anthony Gala that is a pro-life organization. And what I was trying to do was take what is a sensitive situation for all of us and explain where I'm coming from. And what I said was, I'm not pro-life because the Republican Party tells me to be pro-life. I'm pro-life because my husband was adopted, and I'm blessed every day that I get to be with him. Michael and I both had a very hard time having children, and we are blessed to see our children every day. So I'm pro-life because I've been blessed multiple times by what that means. And what I said at the Susan B. Anthony speech that Whoopi got upset about was, I said, as governor, I did everything in my power to protect life. But I didn't talk down to anybody. I didn't criticize the other side. I just did what I could to improve the situation. We don't have to say that women who aren't pro-choice are anti-feminist or anti-women. We are as much women as anybody else, and we have the right to our opinion. And this isn't about a women's vote. This is about a baby's right to live. So Whoopi, in her own way, criticized and said that I was inhuman, and she made my point because she immediately started attacking the other side without listening to what I was trying to say. I wasn't judging anyone. I wasn't criticizing anyone. I was saying why I continue to fight. And so we put those two clips, if you haven't seen it, go to standforamerica.com. We put those two clips side by side, and it speaks for itself. And I knew I didn't have to say much. I knew if I put that out there that everybody would get the point.
It speaks perfectly for itself. So that's a beautiful segue. You recently started a new organization and a new initiative, which is terrific. Talk about Stand for America, the initiatives behind it, the mission statement, and how everyone in this room can help support you in the work that you're doing in that.
Well, thank you. And the main thing is, I know I'm too young to stop fighting, right? I've got too much passion and too much fight in me to stop. And I love policy. And so what's really important is that we continue to push good policy out there. And so we started Stand for America because, honestly, my daughter and my son, they don't get their news from TV or the newspapers. They get it from social media. And I wanted another platform where younger people felt like they could go to find good issues and find out facts on issues. And so if you go to Stand for America, it talks about capitalism versus socialism. It talks about, you know, why term limits matter. It talks about the fact that the Green New Deal is not what they think it is. And you'll see us as we go into the Democratic debates, we'll talk about what those issues are so that you have answers. And then every week we send you a few clips of domestic and foreign policy that keep you in the know. Not complicated, but just let you know what's going on all the time so that you can have that. And we'll continue to broaden it out to other forums. We are going to try and go to some campuses and talk as well. But I hope each and every one of you will go to standforamerica.com and join, because it really is, again, a movement of good policy, a movement of trying to move the country forward in a way that I think we need more forums. And I think that Turning Point shouldn't be out there by itself. I think we have to have other groups that join together that really start to push good policy and give people the ammunition they need to know their right.
Thank you. Thank you. I totally agree. And so looking in the future, the next 5, 10, or 50 years, 15, 50, whatever, what do you think are the biggest challenges that America is going to face?
I think that America really needs to look at a lot of the issues that go with Social Security and Medicaid and those set costs that we have had, they take up so much of the budget, and we have to address it. And it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be fun, but for the good of the country and good of where we're going, we have to address that. So I think that's going to be one big issue. The other thing is, you know, looking at the climate in a situation that when everybody's talking about climate change, I think we acknowledge that, yes, the climate is changing. And I think we look at how we can incentivize companies to want to do more of the right things. As governor of South Carolina, we would have companies come in, they on their own would spend so much money on being green because they wanted to do the right thing and they didn't have to. So I think starting to incentivize and make sure that we're dealing with the environment, I think that the budget makes me crazy in the United States. It really does, because you have to go back and look at every program that we're spending on and say, do we still need it? There's a lot of debt there that we have to do. And then I think from a foreign policy standpoint, we can't take our eyes off of China. China is really becoming a huge threat. They, on a number of fronts, they're building up their military, which is a national security threat to us. They are investing all over the world. And the way they're investing is they're doing to countries that can't pay it back. And the debt is so strong that once they can't pay it back, they're using their ports, they're using to build military installations. And if you saw a map of everywhere China has invested, it's chilling and scary at how infiltrated they've gotten. They have stolen intellectual property to the point from the second they got into the World Trade Organization since. We've got to stop that. The president's trying to do that, and I hope that he holds the line on that. And then they're doing a strange surveillance system, which is now facial recognition. They're watching the actions of all of their people. They're limiting their internet. They have almost 3 million Muslims known as Uyghurs in re-education camps where they're telling them to change their name and their religion and their way of life. It's a really strange new way that China is moving forward, and we have to be very, very conscious of that and make sure we're in front of it.
So I would love to have you close with an example and a story of some of the bipartisan work that you did, or just cross-country work you did at the United Nations in regards to women's rights issues. Because I know that this is something that I've heard you talk about before, and just how women are treated in other countries versus, you know, America and the West, and what that can teach us about America and kind of the lessons you took away from that.
Well, I'll start by saying, you know, while I was governor in South Carolina was lowest in the country on women elected officials. And everyone would say, is it that hard? And my answer was, the reason that we were lowest in the country on women elected officials is because women didn't run. When women run, women win. It is. And so there is a place for all of us. And if you look in the United States, all you have to do is look at boardrooms, you look in classrooms, you look in hospitals, you look in government. We now have the ability to be anything we want to be, and nobody's going to stand in our way. And we need to remember that. My concern really is the fact that when I hear how toxic the politics are. I believe in being passionate, I do, but when it gets toxic, and I say that, you know, now it's getting to where people are calling each other evil. They're hiding behind, you know, anonymous things, and they're saying things that are really reaching a point of hate. When I hear them call each other evil, it bothers me, because I've seen evil. I've been to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they use rape as a weapon of war. I've been to South Sudan, where they've taken babies from women's arms and thrown them into fires. I've been to the Venezuelan border on the Simon Bolivar Bridge, where people walk for hours holding their kids trying to get the one meal they might get that day. The average Venezuelan adults lost 24 pounds. I've looked at the pictures of children who were killed by chemical weapons from Assad in Syria. That's evil. What we're having in our country is a debate of ideas. That's it. And what I worry about is that Americans are forgetting what it means to be grateful, Because on our worst day, we are blessed to be in America.
Well, I know I speak for everyone in this room, and I might get in trouble for saying this, but that's fine. I would love to see you be the first female president of the United States. I know I might get in trouble. And with that, I probably got in trouble with all sorts of people. Whatever, you could just smile. Because the country needs more leaders like you. And I'm personally laser-focused. I know you are and many others getting the president elected in 2020. But no matter what you decide to do in the future, our country will be blessed by whatever you focus your time, energy, talents, and experience on. And so just on behalf of Turning Point USA and all of our student activists and campus reach, thank you for taking the time to address the largest ever Young Women's Leadership Summit.
This has been fantastic. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So, thank you. Wow, what an amazing interview that was with the great Ambassador Nikki Haley. She was so generous with her time. I mean, you could just tell she has the charisma, the clarity of thought, and she is able to distill hard-to-understand issues with charm and just with this patriotic approach. I know for one, I think she's going to have an amazing career in politics no matter what she does. And I'll say, whether she's being tough on China and just unapologetically talking about America's greatness and role in the world, I just think what she is able to do and how she's able to do it is so, so unique. Yeah, the Turning Point USA Young Women's Leadership Summit, tpusa.com. Go to tpusa.com to learn more. We had the most amazing speakers. We had Kimberly Guilfoyle. We had Gina Loudon. We had Governor Kristi Noem. We had, of course, Nikki Haley, that goes without saying. We had Judge Jeanine Pirro. We had Dan Crenshaw. We had just amazing speaker after amazing speaker, and that's how Turning Point USA does it. And you got to get engaged, got to get involved. If you want to contribute, do that. If you want if you have a young person that wants to get involved, do that. Also interviewed Senator Marsha Blackburn and Judge Jeanine Pirro. We'll include those in upcoming episodes of the Charlie Kirk Show. Please support our sponsors. Buy the Trump coin. And I know we're going to keep saying this every show. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, do something so simple for us. Please press subscribe and give us those 5-star ratings. Write a review. That helps us. It boosts us up. More people are listening when they see the show get boosted. More curious people, maybe people on the left, people in the middle. Do you believe in the mission of this show? Please do that. Give us those 5 stars. And again, if you want to help save the future of our country, go to tpusa.com. Turning Point USA. It will make a difference. This is Charlie Kirk from The Charlie Kirk Show. See you Wednesday.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest.